It's the roar of the presses. Working day and night in the north, south, east, and west of our nation, these daily presses pour out over 48 million newspapers. And behind these millions of headlines are the country's ace reporters, men and women who bring you the inside story. Tonight, the makers of Maxwell House Coffee bring you America's Press Conference of the Air, Meet the Press, where you'll meet top newsmen in an unrehearsed, spontaneous press conference with one of the outstanding personalities in today's news, Mr. Menachem Begin. Ready for the conference are four of America's top newsmen who are here to ask the questions you would ask Mr. Begin. Now meet Mr. Lawrence Spivak. Mr. Spivak is the editor of the American Mercury magazine. Noted among the gentlemen of the press is Mr. William Hetherington of the Newark Evening News. And here is Mr. Seymour Friden, distinguished reporter with the New York Herald Tribune. Another important newsman here tonight is Mr. Murray Davis of the New York World Telegram. And here with us is Mr. Bill Slater, moderator of Meet the Press. And here being introduced to the gentlemen of the press is Mr. Menachem Begin. Mr. Menachem Begin is the former commander-in-chief of the Irgun underground organization in Palestine. And now, here is Mr. Slater.
Mr. Begin, I assume you've met gentlemen of the American press before and perhaps know that we shoot our questions pretty rapidly and we shoot them with considerable heat in the interest of getting a story. I am going to ask you tonight, gentlemen, because of the language situation, to state your questions very slowly, and because this is a big subject and it has a lot of angles and aspects to it, I'd like to make the questions just as short and pointed as possible. You all set, Mr. Begin?
Oh, yes.
All right. Suppose you lead off, Larry Spivak.
Mr. Begin, I understand that there's going to be election in Palestine within the next few weeks. Why, therefore, are you, whose party is up, in this country today?
In view of the election, why are you here?
I see. I understand the question. But before I am going to answer this question and before I am killed by other questions of yours...
You won't be.
Oh, as a matter of fact, since I have come to America, I know that a man can be killed not only by a bullet, all the British bullets missed me, but also by questions of newsmen or by the cameras. I must, before I am going to answer this question and other questions, I must apologize before my listeners and before you gentlemen for my bad English or American language. I had only few opportunities to speak English while in underground and even less to speak American, which you probably consider to be the right English. Don't you?
I think we'll have no difficulty understanding you, Mr. Begin.
All right,
you want to wade into Mr. Spivak's question?
I will, certainly.
Good.
The elections, probably in my country, will take place on January 25th, if they are not postponed again. Now, I'm actually leaving Friday or Saturday for my country, so that I will be able to take part in the elections campaign. And now, I have come a month... or 2 months, actually, before the elections to this country on a goodwill mission on behalf of those who fought for the liberation of Palestine from the British yoke. And I did my best to explain to the American people, to the public opinion in America at large, what our aims were and what they still are when we raise the banner of revolt against foreign rule in Palestine.
Now, I think that's answered your question,
Larry. Can I follow
Larry?
Up, though, Bill?
Can you make it a short one, please?
I'll make it as short as I can. You're not a representative of the government, though. You haven't come here as a representative of the government. Why do you think it was necessary for you to take it upon yourself to come to this country to build up goodwill for a party in Palestine? Mm.
I understand the question. I certainly am not a representative of the government. I think it is good that I am not a representative of the government. And I have come to the country not on behalf, just behalf of a party. I have come in the country on behalf of a historic phenomenon. We fought for nearly 5 years. We conducted an armed struggle against the foreign rule and foreign occupation in our country. I do know that our struggle was... of very keen interest to the American people. As a matter of fact, it was preoccupied with our struggle. I do know there are also some distortions of our aims and means of fight. So I consider it to be my duty and my right as well to come to America and to explain what we men who fought for freedom of our people did and what we are going to do in the future as a political free movement within the framework of Israeli democracy.
You've come here to do what we call sell an idea, and our borders certainly not closed to ideas, Mr. Fagan. Murray Davis, what's your question?
Are you going to be a candidate for any office in this January election?
Well, the elections which are going to take place on January 25th will be elections to the Israeli Constituent Assembly, which will have the task to frame the constitution of our newly established state. As a matter of fact, now we have no constitution, and there are even British laws, very hated laws in our country, still in force because there is continuity of law.
But I myself
will be one of the candidates of the list of candidates put forward by my movement, which is called the Freedom Movement, founded by the Irgun Tzvai Leumi.
All right, Seyfried, your question.
Bill, I'd like to ask Mr. Begin, in view of the fact that your organization, the Irgun, has been so controversial through the last 5 years, most recently there's somewhere in Central Europe that you yourself, Mr. Begin, were trained as a Moscow agent and have been active in Komen Forum affairs in the Middle East. Would you care to comment on that?
Oh, yes. This question was put to me some days ago by the diplomatic correspondent of one of the American newspapers. As a matter of fact, I would like to dwell a little longer about its story, which appeared in the Swiss newspaper. The story is that my actual name is not Begin, B-E-G-I-N, but Freiman, F-R-A-J-M-A-N. As a matter of fact, I had very many names during the underground. For instance, I was called Königshofer and Sassover, all with German names, because, people in our country who came from Germany are very loyal to any rule. So I just chose such names. But never in my life I was called Freiman. Then the story goes on that I fought in China and even in Spain, and that I was brought up in Moscow. Well, gentlemen, the communists call me a fascist, and the fascists, or the pro-fascists, call me a communist. So I just come to the conclusion that I am a fascistic communist or a communistic fascist. Who am I?
Let's get a direct answer to Mr. Frieden's question. Were you not trained by the communists?
No, never in my life, certainly
not. Okay, that's the answer we want. Bill Hetherington, you've been sort of quiet over here. Does that mean you don't have any questions?
I'm most interested to find out what Mr. Begin, and please don't think this an iffy question.
Begin is your name, isn't it?
Yes.
B-E-G-I-N.
Okay.
But not B-E-V-I-N.
No.
Bevan.
Go ahead.
It's one letter, but it makes a whole world.
Your Freedom Party, I understand, advocates that Israel should include all of Palestine as it's presently constituted and Transjordan. In the event that you were to be successful in this election and had a controlling voice in the future of Israel, would you recommend that Israel take armed action against Transjordan either now or in the future to depose King Abdullah?
Well, I see. It's a very interesting and very serious question indeed. Certainly when such a great political problem comes out before the elections, it is a little bit premature because I don't know whether we will gain a majority, and as a matter of fact, no party in Israel is going to gain any.
You stand by that principle.
An absolute majority.
You stand by that principle.
Well, that's right. But if we have influence, I will state my case as clear as possible. If we have influence within our country in framing its foreign policy and internal policy, we certainly will strive for the realization of our national aim, which means the liberation of the whole of our country, of Eretz Israel, which certainly comprises the territory on both sides of the Jordan. Now, I would like you to remember, gentlemen, that this is not the first case in history when a country was partitioned, and those who fought for it tried to bring together all the parts of the country, and first and foremost those who were driven away. For instance, there is the partition of Ireland, and never have the Irish patriots given off Northern Ireland.
But
it's not a question only of war, certainly.
Let's get directly to Mr. Hetherington's question. Has he answered it to your satisfaction?
Not quite. I'd like something more explicit.
Do you or do you not favor moving in, taking Transjordan, deposing their king?
Well, I think to depose King Abdullah would be a very good thing for all mankind, but it is a question of possibilities, and it's a question of the given moment. At any rate, I do say that the reuniting of our country as a liberated country is not only a question of war. Not only a question of war. It mustn't be done only by war.
But
perhaps it can be gained also by peaceful means.
Oh, yeah.
And I hope it will be gained by peaceful means.
If it can't be gained by peaceful means, would you do it by force?
We say that, as a matter of fact, now a part of our territory is occupied by a foreign ruler, and we have absolutely right to depose him. The question of how we are going to depose him, leave it to the government, which will come.
That's a matter of mechanics. That answers your question, doesn't it? Murray Davis?
Well, you're talking about we have certain parts there. The Israeli country or nation or government asked you folks or your followers to turn in their arms, didn't they?
I didn't get the answer. The question, I'm sorry.
Well, when you say we, you refer to the Irgun, right?
That's right, our movement.
But Israeli, the government in September gave you folks 24 hours in which to turn in your guns. Isn't that right? Do you follow me on that?
Did the Israeli government give us an ultimatum?
That's right. Isn't that true?
Oh, in Jerusalem. You mean Jerusalem?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's right.
Are your people a part of that Israeli government now?
No, we are not in the government.
Turn in your guns?
Oh, certainly, yes, in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
There is one army only, the Israeli army, composed of both men of the Haganah, men of the Irgun, and men of the Fighters for Freedom of Israel, of all three armed organizations. Certainly.
Larry, I think it's your turn.
Mr. Begin, I have here before me the principles of your movement, and under B you say, the dismemberment of the homeland is an illegal act. The agreement to such a partition is illegal and in no way commits the people of Israel. Now, if the present government is put back into office, where are you going to stand on that? Are you going to be with the government, or are you going to be against the government and once again take up guns?
Oh, no, I think we declared openly and once for all that under our own government there will be no underground and no separate armed organization. We are now a free political democratic people's movement. We have our controversies with our government. I think Mr. Dewey has his controversies with Mr. Truman, hasn't he? In any free country.
But he doesn't say that the acts of Mr. Truman are illegal.
Saying
that the acts of the present government is illegal.
Certainly, but you must come to the background. You know, this partition of the country was just imposed on our people. As a matter of fact, when Mr. Ben-Gurion, who is now prime minister in our country, was in the years of the World War in America and visited the famous Baltimore Hotel, there came out the so-called Baltimore Program, which went now into oblivion. And according to that program, the whole of Western Palestine to the Jordan should be turned into a Jewish state. So as a matter of fact, then I would like to remind you that when the Balfour Declaration was issued by the British and when the mandate was approved by the League of Nations, Palestine was considered to be the territory on both sides of the Jordan. I would like even to remind you that the English had an argument with the French when the French would like to take Transjordan for their mandate of Syria and Lebanon. The English told that Transjordan is an integral part of the Jewish national home. So as a matter of fact, this partitioning of our country is an illegal act, and we are not going to recognize it. If our government will acquiesce in the partition of our country, we are not going to fight it by arms.
You are
because,
not?
Because, no, we are not going to fight any government of our people by force.
I think
we
that
will fight
your question.
Only on the political field.
We'll
go out to the people and state our case.
I think you answered his question right to the point.
So.
You're satisfied, aren't
satisfied.
You, Mr. Spivak? Now, gentlemen, while we take a moment off here from this discussion, this very serious discussion of history in the making, Ken Roberts has something very interesting to say about the history of coffee making.
The people of the world have been drinking and enjoying coffee for well over 1,000 years. And down through the years, folks have brewed their coffee in a great many different ways. This Turkish coffee pot was in use as early as the 13th century. And this one here was popular in the cafes of Austria during the 16 and 1700s. This is the style of service widely used in the coffee houses of England when they were patronized by the foremost writers and social figures of the day. And, of course, you can recognize these styles which are popular in our country today. But regardless of how we make it, to everyone who enjoys coffee, flavor is first in importance. And, of course, it is delicious flavor. Famous good-to-the-last-drop flavor that has made this coffee, Maxwell House, the most popular brand in the entire United States. To create this famous good-to-the-last-drop flavor, the Maxwell House experts choose not one but many choice coffees from these rich Latin American plantations. Manizales coffees add mellowness. Medellin coffees give richness. Fine, full body is contributed by the Bucaramangas coffees, while many other choice coffees add vigor to the Maxwell House blend. No wonder this is recognized everywhere as the sign of good coffee, as the sign of wonderfully good Maxwell House coffee. Tomorrow, enjoy the finer flavor of Maxwell House. There's a smile of pleasure in every cup, because it's truly good to the last drop. For the best in coffee drinking pleasure, always ask for Maxwell House.
Mr. Bagan, before I turn these reporters loose on you again here for a moment, I'd like to ask you a personal question. Did you know my old college classmate and my very dear friend, Colonel David Marcus?
I didn't know him personally, and I regret not having opportunity to meet him. I do know him because I heard a lot about him from the boys who were under his command. He was one of the most beloved commanders in Israel, a heroic man and a great commander indeed.
At West Point, our alma mater, and here in New York, we're all very, very proud of Mickey Marcus. Well, now, gentlemen, you have some more questions ready, Si?
If I can slip a question in edgewise here, why, I'd like to ask Mr. Bagan if he intends to take any other people into his organization or his political movement as it's now constituted, other than Jews, shall we say.
Yes, as a matter of fact, Druzes, Cherkesses, and Arabs have already joined the freedom movement.
What groups, Mr. Bagan?
Druzes. Mm-hmm. There are the Druze famous mountain, and Cherkesses and Arabs. They are minorities in Palestine itself, and they joined the freedom movement. We have no racial basis for our movement.
Is that true of all the other parties as well?
I should think so. I think so. All other parties. For instance, Mapai and Mapam, I think they will also get members of minorities, of national minorities. There is no one movement in Israel who has a racial point of view.
Murray?
Since your organization, you just now said your organization would not take up arms again against your own government, why then aren't you willing to let the United Nations settle the disputes in that country and your disturbed country?
I would like to, for the first time in my life, to answer this question by a question. Do you think really the United Nations are capable to solve the problem of Palestine or to solve any problem in the world? I must say all men of goodwill must regret the situation now prevailing in the United Nations. United Nations were a great hope for mankind, war-stricken and poverty-stricken, but the United Nations did not succeed in solving the problems or either of my country or of any country in the world. Now, look, there was a resolution of the 29th of November, 1948, and the United Nations promised to put it into force. It did nothing. Now the boundaries of the partition are not more in existence, as you know, and the United Nations send mediators and conciliation committees that have the resolutions.
Well, Mr. Bagan,
and there's one result, war, continuous war in Palestine.
But your answer is you're not willing to have the United Nations handle it. Is that your answer to Mr. Davis?
I don't believe that the United Nations, under the circumstances, have the ability and even the will to solve the problem of Palestine.
Do you think the United Nations should be disbanded? Do you think they should do away with the United Nations?
I don't think so. I pray to God that the United Nations be what it should be. United Nations.
Why keep the United Nations if they're no good?
I'm not in the councils of international politics.
Well, you have an opinion on this, definitely.
Well, I think he stated his opinion, Murray. I don't want to get off into a discussion of the United Nations because we've got so much we want to talk about Palestine. Bill, I think you're due for
a question. There's one point that I'd like cleared up. When you joined with Zva Haganah in May, put your Irgun battalions in Haganah, with your own officers, right?
That's right.
Now, are they still functioning in the overall Defense Army of Israel as your battalions with your officers?
Not all of them, because some of them, certainly. There are units composed in their majority, in their absolute majority, of men of the Irgun. Certainly, and the officers are also men of the Irgun. For instance, the unit which captured the most important stronghold of the Egyptian army in the Negev was a unit composed of men of the Irgun under the command of an officer of the Irgun who was killed in action.
Does that satisfy you, Bill? Larry?
Mr. Begin, your organization and you have been accused of many acts of violence and terror. Do you think that that's a good way to settle a dispute today?
Well, I think, Mr. Spivak, your Washington was accused for many years of acts of violence and probably also of terror. I think it is not the relevant question about using methods of fight.
No, not George Washington, acts of terror.
Oh, not of terror, but just using a form of fight.
Well, that was in a formally declared war.
Certainly, but you know the King George III never recognized the legality of this war, and even a certain part of the American people called the men of Washington rebels, and they were just outlawed. You know that Hale was hanged by the British. Certainly, we would have preferred to fight an open fight against the British, but you at that time were a strong people and partially also armed. You had the opportunity and the possibility to get out into field.
We are a very
small minority, and we had to fight an underground fight.
If you had it to do over again, would you be interested in acts of terrorism? Is that your question?
No, I want to follow that.
Mr. Spivak's question squared away.
There's one very important difference, and that is only a very small percentage of the people in Palestine were with you. Yours was a small underground organization working against the people there, too. Now, as I said, how can you justify that?
Well,
how are you going to continue to do things of that kind if what the government does doesn't meet with your approval?
Oh, well, Mr. Spivak, about the future, I already declared clearly, quite clearly, that we are now a political movement, are not going to take arms against any government of our own people. But about the past, you must understand, had we the people against us all the time, how could we possibly how could we continue our fight for 5 years? You must consider it as a matter of fact. As a matter of fact, we for 5 years stood against a foreign ruler and a foreign occupation army of 100,000 men. And we have beaten this army and we have liquidated this rule. Certainly the people in its heart was with us, the majority. Formally, there were declarations on behalf of the official leadership against us. But you must consider the fact. How could we have possibly fought our enemy had we had all of our people against us? This is not true.
Isn't it
is not true that our acts were acts of terrorism. It was a liberation war of our people against a foreign occupation rule, which had no right whatsoever to be in our country. And we have lived to see that this rule was liquidated.
Thanks God. Are you through on that question? I'd like to get Murray Davis in here.
Get Murray in.
I want to follow this up, Larry. Just who was your group fighting against? Who was your enemy?
Our enemy, the enemy number one of our people, is certainly the British Empire.
Well, who was enemy number two? You were fighting your own people, the Arabs and the British.
We never fought our own people. I never said it. This is your own judgment.
Oh, wait a minute.
Sorry to say, we never fought our own people. I think we fought for our people. And
against factions of your people, though.
We never fought against our people. Certainly there are controversies, and I brought this comparison with the American War for Liberation in order to prove that in any people who fought for freedom, there were also elements who rose against this fight for freedom. I think it is an historic established fact that in Philadelphia there were a part of your population which called your fighters for freedom rebels, and they were just outlawed by them. Nevertheless, the fighters succeeded. And then you know that nothing succeeds like success. No, the British, whereas they occupied our country, were our direct enemy, and we fought against them. The British still are our enemy, because they would like to bring their puppet, King Abdullah, into our country in order to come through him back to our country. Certainly, this derives our people of its absolute right for freedom in its own country.
Well, now, wait a minute. Let's check. Is he getting at an answer to your question?
Yeah, yes. I just wanted to say that I am not taking sides. I have no interest on sides. I'm just trying to find out who your number one enemy was and your number two enemy.
Oh, you know, any people has many enemies. Certainly, when, for instance, an Egyptian army fights against us, it is an enemy. I don't consider the Egyptian people an enemy of our people. It is just mistaken. But the enemy, the real enemy now, is an empire which would like to crush us and to enslave us.
Sai?
Mr. Begin, some time ago, I believe your organization said that it was in a state of war with Great Britain.
That's right.
And do you see any manner or means of effecting some kind of rapprochement with Great Britain?
This always depends on the other side. You know, we never believe in eternal hatred. There should be no eternal hatred between peoples. If Great Britain recognizes our right for our country, and if it behaves well in to other peoples, if it doesn't oppress them, certainly we will not consider it to be an enemy. Now Britain has hostile aims against our people. Therefore, we consider it to be an enemy.
I want to see if I can get one short question in from Bill Hetherington here.
The domestic scene, the domestic scene. Histadrut is controlled by Mr. Ben-Gurion, do you say?
I think so.
Right. Are you opposed to Histadrut as a labor organization?
No, we are not opposed to the Histadrut as a trade union organization, as a workers' organization. What we actually oppose is the situation in which a trade union is also an employer and has got some monopolies in the economic field
in our
country.
You have your own union?
No, we have no union whatsoever. There are some unions, and we can recognize the right of any worker to unite in any trade union he wishes.
Did your men ever help to break a strike?
No, never, never, never.
All right.
We're always all preoccupied with our fight for freedom against our external enemy. We had nothing to do with strikes and breaking strikes.
I'm sorry.
That's one of the stories.
I'm sorry we haven't any more time for these interesting questions, Mr. Begin's interesting answers. We're going to learn about next week's guest in just a moment, but now suppose we learn how folks all over this country are enjoying a really good cup of coffee every day
yes.
of the week.
North, south, east, or west, it's Maxwell House wherever you go. Famous for finer flavor, this delicious coffee is good to the last drop. For the best in coffee drinking pleasure, always ask for Maxwell House.
Next week's guest will be Mr. Norman Thomas, who as the candidate of the Socialist Party has run for president more times than any other American. Now this is Ken Roberts saying goodnight for Mr. William Hetherington, Mr. Lawrence Spivak, Mr. Murray Davis, Mr. Seymour Friden, Mr. Bill Slater, and Mr. Menachem Begin. Meet the Press is presented to you each week by Maxwell House Coffee. Be sure to look in next week, same time, same station, for Meet the Press, brought to you by the makers of Maxwell House Coffee, the coffee that's always good to the last drop.
This is NBC Television. The Pioneer NBC television station.